It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Boston Bruins dig deep for this one tonight. Morgan Geeky with a power play game winner late. Brad Marchand with the insurance, and Jonas Korpisalo was outstanding in picking up the victory. He has won 4 of his last 5.
That was the call on Saturday night, last night, as the Bruins picked up a win in division against the Buffalo Sabres, who... boy, oh boy, one of these days they'll figure out their, I don't know, decade-long rebuild. I remember the Bruins playing the Sabres, I think it was, 2008, 2009 in the playoffs. Miroslav Shatan scores the game winner in overtime against Ryan Miller. Feels like a lifetime ago, and I can only imagine how it feels for Sabres fans, but I digress. Welcome back, hour number 2 here on WEEI, just after 9 o'clock here on December the 22nd. And right now, in case you're curious, if you haven't left your house yet, yes, it's 11 degrees in Boston right now. So if you're driving around here this morning, bundle up as you're doing so, doing some holiday shopping, stuff like that. Hope you're doing it with us. Thanks so much for joining us. Don't forget, Football Sunday takes over the airwaves beginning at 10 o'clock to get you ready for the Patriots and the rest of the slate here in week 16 in the NFL. We have broadcast coverage of Eagles and Commanders beginning at 1 here on EEI, and then the Six Rings postgame show will take over around 7:30 after the end of Patriots and Bills. All that and more on a busy football Sunday here on WEEI. It was the Bruins 3 and the Buffalo Sabres 1, and a really impressive third period from Morgan Geeky. And I implore you to read Scott McLaughlin's piece on Morgan Geeky on WEEI.com. He wrote about what has been an up and down roller coaster, tumultuous season for Morgan Geeky, but whenever there's a change at the head coach spot on a team, obviously from a team perspective, it's usually commonplace to see the team get the head coach bump, so to speak, where you play better, there's renewed energy, renewed commitment, renewed this, renewed that, whatever. But what fascinates me more when there's a change at the coaching position is what happens for individual players. And I think Morgan Geeky is becoming the guy to watch, or at least a prominent guy to watch with the Bruins, when it comes to the difference between Jim Montgomery and Joe Sacco. And to just quickly paraphrase the story from Scott, and again, go to the EEI website to read the full thing, Geeky started the season on the second line for the Bruins on the wing, then within 5 games was a healthy scratch. So went right from the catbird seat, essentially, all right, David Pasternak's going to score, and then we're going to roll the second line out, and then Morgan Geeky's going to score, and that's how this is going to go. He was scratched, couldn't find his spot in the lineup with Jim Montgomery, but then the coaching change happens, and he has now found a spot on the second line, top 6, with David Pastrnak and Pavel Zacha. The numbers, they have now played 185 minutes together at 5-on-5 this season, and in those minutes, the Bruins have outshot opponents 99-69, that's almost 60% of the shots, registered an expected goal share of 59.8, which is a saber metric that tells you that they're controlling play more than their opponents, and recorded 38 high danger chances to 22 against. That's over 60%. Those are all numbers that show that when that line is on the ice, they're driving play. And yesterday was a really fun microcosm of what I think this season is starting to become, or what you hope this season is becoming for Morgan Geekie, which is one of redemption. So he scores a goal earlier in the game that ends up getting negated due to an offsides call. He then turns around with under 2 minutes remaining in the third, on the power play, mind you, gets a one-time pass from David Pastrnak and fires it home. I know that there was some contact in front of the net, but ends up counting. Geekie gets the goal, 2-1 Bruins. They tack on an empty netter, 3-1 is your final. And to see that no-quit, never-say-die attitude within the context of just having a goal taken back and coming back and scoring, that was fun. That was cool. I enjoyed that, and I hope that there is more of that. And maybe it is an interim head coach empowering a player to play like that. But, I mean, there's talent with this player. Last year, 39 points in 76 games, 17 goals. Got into the system after bouncing around 2 years with Carolina, 2 with Seattle, where he scored 3, 3, 7, and 9 goals. Then up to 17 and 39 points. And his ice time also jumped by almost 5 full minutes when he was playing last year under Jim Montgomery. So this year, again, things weren't working under Montgomery. That's up and down the lineup. That's not just specific to Geekie, but it seemed like Geekie was just in the crosshairs of the coach from the beginning. So we know that there is something there with this player. He was a third-round pick in 2017 and has put together a pretty nice career for himself. But the Bruins, in general, their success this season in maintaining at least a spot in the playoffs in the Atlantic Division or a wild card is not, for my money, based on Marchand or Pastrnak or, to a certain extent, Elias Lindholm or Charlie McAvoy. It's on the Morgan Geekies, the Oliver Wahlstroms, and the Trent Fredericks, your middle six and your bottom six players that have been an inconsistent part of your picture this year and in years past. Really, since that 2019 run to the Cup, you have lost your depth that made you so dangerous, and that middle six area is where you're supposed to be able to develop some of your younger players that you draft, and you just haven't done that. But you found a guy in Geekie who was on the scrap heap for Seattle a couple of years ago, and you turned him into a 17-goal scorer. That's not insignificant. That's 39 points and 17 goals is a third-line player. Now, he's in the top six for the Bruins this year, but from a production perspective, that's a good third-line winger, I would say. And you also picked up Oliver Wahlstrom off waivers. And we all knew Wahlstrom in this area for the crazy mini one-on-one, you know, pick the puck up on the stick lacrosse-style goal that he scored when he was, whatever, 9, 10, 11 years old. So he skated and done incredible things on TD Garden ice in the past. But Wahlstrom was drafted by the Islanders, and what Oliver Wahlstrom does well is what the Islanders hate about hockey players, which is offensive prowess, shooting the puck, playing along the perimeter. He was never going to be the two-way, you know, defensive winger. You were never going to ask Oliver Wahlstrom to kill penalties. And when you play within the Islanders system, and that's especially a couple coaches ago with Barry Trotz, which is kind of the era where he came up, Trotz into Lane Lambert before Patrick Waugh, you couldn't get away with that. And I think it's also fair to say that, you know, maybe the elite top line winger that folks thought he was going to be in his draft class, that's not necessarily what that player is. But again, there's talent there. There is a player in the style of Morgan Geekie where one team's trash can be your treasure if you put him in the right situation to be successful. I believe Joe Sacco addressed Oliver Wahlstrom and the couple games that he's played as a member of the Bruins since being claimed off waivers, and here were his thoughts on him.
You know, I thought he was fine. Again, he was on that line. He doesn't get a lot of power play time when we're on the power play because, you know, we have a guy that stays out there a little bit more. And then sometimes on the penalty kills, he's not in the PK. So his ice time gets cut a little bit. Certain areas, I try to find a way to utilize him a little bit more. But he's still getting acclimated. He's getting adjusted to a new team, and it's going to take a little bit.
Quick story on Oliver Wahlstrom. Him and I were are the same age, and we played against each other in a tournament, and he scored on our goalie from center ice, took a slap shot right over the red line and picked a corner over the blocker side. So the talent's been there for a while, and I can tell you that firsthand. I saw it from the bench, ironically enough. But all that to say this, there is skill here. And this is why I like a move like this. I like what they did with Geeky. If you're not going to draft players that are going to make an impact, or you're not going to empower your drafted players to make an impact, you had Fabian Lizell last year, who was almost a point-per-game player, didn't really give him any run last year, came to camp, was disappointing this year. You sent him back to the minors quickly, gave him the quick hook. And then same thing with Matt Patra, who earlier this week scored in his seventh straight game in Providence. And you're still not ready to give him a shot. And that's a decision that you made, and Bruins fans just have to live with it. If you're not going to empower your younger players to get a shot in the middle six and give them some run and let them fail in a year where I think it's fair to say that you're probably not a cup contender, but you still could be a playoff contender if you get that secondary scoring, well, then you got to score from somewhere, because You have 13 and 12 between Marchand and Pastrnak, another 8 from Pavel Zacha, and past that, the scoring goes down significantly. The Bruins are, I wrote this down, and I wanted to share this as well. Bruins are tied for 26th in scoring at 5-on-5. They have 88 total goals this season. I think it's 56 that they have 5-on-5. So you're not in a position to be turning down players that can score. If you're not going to draft these younger guys to supplement Marchand and Pastrnak on your top line, then you do need to find these scrap heap players that you think can fit somewhere within this system. And there's offensive talent for Oliver Wahlstrom if you put him with the proper players that are going to go and do what he will not do in the defensive zone. And you say, listen, I don't need to see you below the tops of the circles in your own end, but what I need to see you do is be around the net and give me a quantity and quality approach on offense. I don't mind that at all, and I think there's something there because this team does need that secondary scoring. I think it's the biggest hole that has not been addressed consistently by Don Sweeney, that maybe now you're starting to see some potential and see some growth in that area, so it doesn't all fall on your two big wingers, one on either side. So I'd love to see what's coming from Morgan Geeky, finally rounding out that top six a bit for the Bruins and giving them the winger that it seems like they have been missing for a while in that top six. Then what? What are we going to do from there? Is Trent Frederick going to be a member of this Bruins group in the long term? And are you going to trust him to continue to grow in the way that he has? He's grown into a guy that's a point per every other game guy, plays with an edge, good culture guy in terms of what the Bruins do so well, which is outwork everybody, usually. Are you going to trust Wahlstrom? Are you going to give him those opportunities on the power play and see if he can find that touch offensively that he just hasn't found in the NHL? A lot of questions in terms of how the Bruins are going to score, but they're winning. What you can say about this group that at least gives you hope that they will continue to be a playoff team is they're beating the teams that they're supposed to. Now, they're kind of getting shelled by some of the teams that they're not supposed to, and that game against Winnipeg was a prime example of that. I was really, really disappointed about how that game ended in Edmonton. I really would have liked to see you. I mean, this is not a hot take. This is every fan in the world would say this, but you did so well to keep the Edmonton Oilers offense at bay in that final game of the Western trip. And you've been out on the road for two weeks. You got shelled at the beginning. You found your form, 1-2 straight. You kept Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in that dynamic offense that was a game away from winning the Stanley Cup last year, a one goal. And for no goals for most of the game, I should say, and just kind of lost it, took your foot off the gas, and Jeremy Swayman gave up another goal on a rebound, which is its own issue. But all that to say, you came back, settled, and you won a game that you were supposed to. Now you have another tough test in front of you. One of the best teams in the NHL that I don't think anybody had on their radar coming into the season to be nearly this good. The 22-8-2 Washington Capitals that you'll play on Monday at 7 at TD Garden. You play them over your next two games. I think either two in a row or two of three that you play the Washington Capitals. They've gotten goaltending from Logan Thompson and Charlie Lindgren, two castoffs, one from Vegas and one from Montreal. They've gotten 38 points from Dylan Strome, 16 goals from Connor McMichael, the dollar store Connor McDavid, and they're a good team. So the tests kind of ebb and flow for the Bruins moving forward after that Western trip. Buffalo is a game you should win. You won. Washington, not a team that you're supposed to beat if you look at their record. Then you get two in a row against Columbus, a home-and-home against the Blue Jackets. Should be able to handle business against the Columbus Blue Jackets, who sit at 13-15-6. That's the kind of team that you have beaten, at least under Joe Sacco. Then you get Washington again before the New York Rangers, who have been their own tire fire so far this year. So tests kind of ebb and flow for the Bruins, but what I like is the trend that you're seeing from Morgan Geeky on that second line since they've been put together over the last few weeks. And I like the move of a player like Oliver Wahlstrom. Your right side looks better, but again, you need it more consistently for the Bruins to move their way up the standings. We'll flip back to the NFL and look at the rest of the Week 16 slate. A couple of games on a Saturday, getting ready for a couple of games on a Wednesday on Christmas. But a lot of games to keep an eye on here on this Sunday in the NFL. So we'll run you through those and give our thoughts on those after this. But first, my good friend Zach has to tell you what else is trending across the world of sports.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Bruins returned home after a five-game West Coast swing, extending the Buffalo Sabres losing streak to 13 games. 3-1 your final last night from the Garden. Charlie Coyle, Morgan Geeky, and Brad Marchand, the goal scorers. Next up for the Bees, a home matchup against the best team in the NHL, the Washington Capitals. Puck drop from the Garden tomorrow at 7. Celtics avenge Thursday night's loss against the Bulls with a 123-98 blowout victory over those same Bulls in Chicago. Monster night for Jason Tatum, who notched his first triple-double of the season. 43 points, 15 rebounds, and 10 assists, the final line for Tatum. Next up for the season, trip to Orlando to take on the Magic tomorrow night, tip-off at 7. Patriots in Buffalo taking on MVP frontrunner Josh Allen and the Bills. Pats already ruled out running back Jamichael Hasty and corner Marcus Jones, while Kyle Duggar, Keon White, and Jabril Peppers are among those listed as questionable. Kickoff from Highmark Stadium at 4:25. Make sure you tune in right here on WEEI after the game for Fitzy and Hart on the Six Rings postgame show, taking you up to Sunday Night Football. Elsewhere around the NFL, the Eagles in the nation's capital to take on the Commanders. Vikings in Seattle for a matchup with the Seahawks. Buccaneers traveling to Jerry's World to face off with the Cowboys. That one is your Sunday Night Football matchup. As I just mentioned, don't forget you can hear Westwood One's coverage of Sunday Night Football right here on WEEI after the Six Rings postgame show. First round of the inaugural 12-team college football playoff has come and gone. Notre Dame beat Indiana on Friday night in South Bend to advance to play Georgia. Penn State beat SMU. They'll face off with Boise State next. Texas beat Clemson in Austin. They advance to take on former Big 12 foe Arizona State. And Ohio State drubbed Tennessee to earn a rematch with Oregon. Those second-round games go down on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Dan Ball coming up after this.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time, they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Jackson stands in, going deep, has a man. It is caught. Flowers still up on his feet and breaks through. Finally taken down inside of the 40. Jackson going end zone. It is caught. Bateman, touchdown.
Well, that was the call, or one of the many, from the Ravens' 34-17 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday. That evened up the Ravens and the Steelers at 10-5. Now in a tie at the top of the AFC North. Two of the better teams that we see in the AFC right now, both of which are trailing the Patriots' opponent today, the Buffalo Bills, and all of whom are trailing the Kansas City Chiefs, who are 14-1 on the season. They beat the Houston Texans 27-19. Patrick Mahomes, 260 yards and a touchdown, coming off of a week where there was certainly uncertainty that he was going to play, but he was allowed to play. He threw for a touchdown. He ran for a touchdown. Kareem Hunt ran for one as well. Chiefs 14-1 and 8-0 at home. Only blemish, Buffalo Bills, which is an interesting element that comes into today's game for the Patriots. But Chiefs are winners, and the Ravens are winners. And those teams will mix up the order and play on Christmas Day. So that's kind of where where the Saturday doubleheader comes from. As we flip to Week 17, it'll be Chiefs and Steelers at 1 o'clock on Christmas, and then Ravens and Texans at 4:30 on that Netflix football doubleheader. Zach, I don't know about you. Coming off of the Tyson and Logan Paul, whichever Paul it was, fight on Netflix, that was a disaster from trying to watch it. I have no expectations for the Christmas doubleheader to be any good. I feel like it's going to be, and the throw is buffering. That's all I can expect from this kind of thing.
Yeah, if my experience from the Tyson fight holds true, I'm not even going to get to, and the throw is, it's just going to be buffering for the entire time.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So anyways, digressing from there, those two teams played yesterday. They'll play again on Wednesday, and those were the winners. Flipping over to the Sunday slate, normally in this area, in years past, you're looking at teams like the Chiefs and the Texans and the Ravens. And all right, so we're jockeying for position. Today, Patriots fans are going to have one eye on their game and the other eye on the toilet bowl that's happening out in Las Vegas. You know them, you love them. The 2-12 Las Vegas Raiders against the 3-11 Mac Jones-led Jacksonville Jaguars out at Allegiant Stadium, because the tank is on. And according to Tankathon right now, the Las Vegas Raiders at 2-12 have the number one overall pick in this year's draft. They and the New York Giants are both 2-12, but based on strength of schedule for all of the other opponents on their schedule, they are the worst team in football right now. They're 2-12, Giants are 2-12, and then New England, Jacksonville, Carolina, Tennessee, and Cleveland are all 3-11. By the way, those two teams that are at the top of the list, Vegas has lost 10 games in a row, so they were 2-2 at one point, and the Giants have lost 9 in a row. Those teams were either 500 or within a game of 500 in October into early November, and that's where they are now. Patriots have lost 4 in a row. They're now 3-11. So if you are a Patriots fan today, you are rooting. You're rooting for Mac Jones. You're not rooting for Mac Jones. You're rooting against Mac Jones. That's the easy thing to do. You're rooting
against
them.
Plenty enough.
Thank you. Yeah, you're rooting against Mac Jones. You're rooting for the Raiders. And the Giants are taking on the Atlanta Falcons. So you're actually rooting for, I guess it's Tommy DeVito at this point. Is DeVito or Drew Lock? Do you know?
I think it's Drew Lock.
It is Drew Lock today. Okay, I've lost track. No longer Daniel Jones, who I did see bought gifts for his offensive line despite being on the practice squad for the Vikings, which I thought was kind of a cool move. But so you're rooting for the Giants to win and break a 9-game losing streak, and then you're rooting for the Vegas Raiders to win at home and break a 10-game losing streak. So those are the toilet bowls that you're rooting for if you're a New England Patriots fan today to try to get the Patriots as far down the list as you can. And what you do with that pick, you know, that's anybody's guess. You want to draft Travis Hunter, you're not in the market to draft a quarterback, thank God, because this year is a brutal quarterback class, it looks like. But those are the bad games that you're going to be keeping an eye on as you get ready as the Patriots to take on Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. What Allen has done this season is tremendous, but then you have to take into account a report from earlier this morning from Ian Rappaport that confirms Allen played part of the season through a broken left hand. It's said that he is fully healthy now, but there was a play in week one, left for a touchdown, and landed on his left hand and broke his hand. What we knew at the time was that he was playing through a hand injury. He was wearing a glove. He had it taped up. There were many different ways to kind of glean that something was wrong. You could also tell Allen took snaps from under center 15.4% of the time, the third lowest rate of his career. So they were changing. They were changing the play calling to try to just make it more comfortable for him. It just adds a whole nother element into just how incredible this season has been. Allen's 25 touchdown passes against 5 picks has helped him to a 103.5 passer rating for an offense that is functioning better than any point last year. That coming directly from NFL.com and Ian Rappaport. You have a group that is relatively healthy. By my count, there are 7 players on the Bills injury report after Friday's practice that are questionable, but nobody's been ruled out. Rasul Douglas, Damar Hamlin, Matt Milano, Taylor Rapp, Curtis Samuel, Bail Inspector Dorian Williams, all listed as questionable coming into Sunday's game. But what we mentioned earlier on in the show that I think bears repeating is this offense and this team as a whole was viewed by many as getting worse this offseason. I remember looking at the picture in the AFC East, and this tells you how quickly things change, and going, well, you know, the Patriots are rebuilding, so they're kind of the free space to likely finish last. And then you add the Bills, who unequivocally, I thought, took a step backwards just in terms of roster construction. I thought they were sneaking in and maybe a wild card team, but certainly did not see this. Then you had the Dolphins, who, you know, once the temperature gauge gets under 40, Tua is useless, but you thought they'd still be a somewhat average team. And if Tua was healthy at the beginning of the year, we may be having a different conversation about the wild card there. And then there was the Jets, who, all right, Rodgers is healthy. You have Wilson, you have Breece Hall. Oh, they traded for Hassan Reddick. He hasn't shown up to camp, but he'll get there. He'll be fine. It's fine. Robert Saleh, Nate Hackett. Look at the brain trust under the headset for the New York Jets. Jets should be able to win this division. Bills and Dolphins will fight for second. Patriots in last. How little I knew. However, the Bills deserve a ton of credit for what they've done. James Cook, 828 yards and 13 touchdowns on the ground. They transitioned that running back room over from Devin Singletary and Zach Moss into the younger player, James Cook, who fumbled on his very first carry as an NFLer. But he has grown into a true three-down back. They do get a lot of support from Ray Davis, 357 yards and 3 touchdowns, and then Ty Johnson as well. But the receiving room is fascinating to me because more times than not, when you have a quarterback that's playing as well as Josh Allen is, there's that clear number one receiver that gets the lion's share. And we saw it yesterday with Lamar Jackson passing to not Rashad, Zay Flowers, I should say. And Zay Flowers just went over the 1,000 receiving yard mark yesterday. For the Bills, Khalil Shakir is your leader at 774 receiving yards and 4 touchdowns. Then it's Keon Coleman, 481, Dalton Kincaid, 409, Mac Hollins, 295, and the team leader with 5 touchdowns, and then Dawson Knox, 285 yards and 1 touchdown. This is not an elite receiving room by any stretch of the imagination. They added Curtis Samuel in the offseason, 201 yards and a touchdown, big whoop. They traded for Amari Cooper, 231 yards over 6 games and a touchdown. Average at best. But what makes it such a scheming nightmare for opposing defenses is, A, any one of those players can be the targeted receiver of choice on any game, and B, Allen's just going to find a way to beat you basically no matter what you throw at them from a defensive scheming perspective. So it brings to mind the question of who do the Patriots have and who can the Patriots trust to spy Josh Allen and keep him contained. They can beat you on the ground with their quarterback and their running back, plural. They can beat you through the air, and it's more than just dink and dunk. I know the numbers suggest that, they just kind of dink and dunk their way around the football field. Yes, they do. That's kind of the crux of what they do. But they can extend it out in certain situations. They can go deep. But I think that's kind of what's changed the most about this passing offense is Allen would have to throw deep to Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis in years past. You'd see him try to force those throws 20, 30, 40 yards downfield, whatever. And that's where he'd get into trouble with his turnovers. It's a safer offense for Josh Allen. That's why you see the interceptions down, and it's a deeper offense, which is why you have 5 or 6 guys that are part of the passing offense at any point in time. So it's certainly a dynamic team to have to scheme for on defense. It's a tough test for DeMarcus Covington in this Patriots defense to try to scheme against. And offensively, there are opportunities to beat this Bills secondary, especially when you see that Hamlin's questionable, Rasul Douglas is questionable. You have players in the secondary for the Bills that are banged up. So it goes back to the conversation from the first hour of the show. Is Alex Van Pelt and Drake May, are they on the same page? And is AVP willing to let him air it out and allow Drake May to try to drag this team into the fight offensively? Do they have the talent to receive the ball on the other side? I don't know, but is the play calling set up as such where May will be allowed to air it out a little bit? He's never going to be able to go toe-to-toe with Josh Allen from a skill and a dominance perspective, but let him try. Let him make mistakes and try to beat a Bills defense and a Bills secondary that is banged up and has its warts, because they are a better run defense than a pass defense if you just look at the way that teams have produced against them in the past. Unfortunately, the Patriots are probably a better running offense than a passing offense, but let your quarterback go, man. Take the reins off a little bit. What's the worst that's going to happen? He's going to turn the ball over and you're going to lose? Guess what? You're going to lose if you don't let him do that anyways. You're probably going to lose regardless. So lose, but have a fighting chance in the process. And give your fans a reason to be proud of the way that you played. How few times have you come away from a game this season as a Patriots fan and gone, I'm proud of the way this team played from start to finish on both sides of the ball. I'm not frustrated and pulling my hair out with the way that the game was called or the penalties or anything like that. Let your quarterback loose a little bit and let it be a fight. Is he capable of it? I don't know, but you should at least allow him to try, because this team in Buffalo does not have a lot of holes. So you got to try to be aggressive with what you can. Okay, we're just about up against it here, so we're going to take a break. 617-779-7937. That is the number to call. That is the number to text. Your thoughts on the Patriots and what you would consider to be a victory for them in Buffalo, even if they're up against the 14-point underdogs going in against the Bills this afternoon. We'll wrap things up on the other side, but don't forget, Football Sunday, Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, the entire crew breaking down the Patriots game against the Bills, and the rest of the NFL slate takes over at 10 o'clock. We have Commanders and Eagles at 1, and the Six Rings postgame show takes over around 7:30 after the end of the Patriots game today. We'll take a commercial break, I should say. I should do that right now. We're back with more after this.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball. Dan Ball on WEEI.
617-779-7937 is the phone number, getting you ready for Patriots and Bills later this afternoon. Your expectations for the Pats and what would be considered a victory. Let's go to Matt, Rhode Island. Matt, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I like your show.
Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, just calling in. A victory would be beating them on the scoreboard and nothing less. Let's just get that straight. And, yep. You know, I think the offense, the offensive players are saying they like Van Pelt, so come out and have your coaches back because your head coach is a fraud. I mean, you've talked 100 times about being a leader, and yeah, we saw what kind of leader he was many times this year. Emotional, defensive, sounds like really, that's him. That's his words, not mine.
Right.
So come out and have your back. Let your hands go on offense, like you were saying. And, you know, throw the ball around and we'll see what happens. Thanks.
There you go. Yeah, Matt, thanks for the call. I completely agree in the sense that you got to take the reins off a little bit there. You're playing for nothing at this point, so you might as well play with a little bit of fun and hopefully the way you'd want to play as an offense next year. But let's go to David in the car. David, something is pathetic right now for Patriots fans. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call. It is pathetic that we're sitting here in a way, see whatever happens for them to lose. You know, here's my theory on this team, on this whole organization.
Yeah.
Blow this team up. Blow all the coaches out of here. Get rid of Mayo. Get rid of everyone. And keep your players, obviously, but you get rid of all the coaching staff and you start fresh next year. You have to. You cannot afford to take another chance of another year thinking that Mayo is the right coach when he's clearly not. He's inexperienced. He should not have been the coach this year. That was a mistake that Kraft made, and it needs to be fixed. It needs to be fixed now.
David, thanks for the call, and I think there's a lot of sentiment like that. I saw a conversation going on social media of basically I can't even wrap my head around the notification and the announcement that you'd get if the Patriots said, hey, we're keeping our coaching staff for another season. I saw it basically cannot fathom was the feeling if that ever came through. So there's a huge sentiment that it's time. You tried to cut the head off the snake, so to speak, with Bill Belichick, but keep the Patriot way last year and bring in your Bill Jr., essentially your coach, and waiting to try to keep it going. But you put together too many spare parts that just aren't fitting together between your leadership at the front office level, putting together the roster, your leadership at the head coach position, and then your leadership in the coordinators, and it's just not clicking. So there is a lot of sentiment out there of it's just time to blow the entire thing to smithereens and start from scratch. So, hey, 3 games to try to get it right. That's what Diana Russini of The Athletic said about Gerard Mayo. We'll see what happens over the final 3 games. Patriots taking on the Buffalo Bills, 4:25 this evening in a game that will air on CBS as part of a loaded slate of games coming up here on this Sunday, and games that both have implications for the playoffs and games that that were being mentioned on the text line as well that will have implications for the Patriots in their draft spot. What would be a win for me at Buffalo from the 401? First and foremost, Mayo doesn't have a media collapse and make a comment he needs to walk back. 10-point or less loss, competent and diverse play calling, and the defense doesn't look like they gave up how they did against Arizona. Yeah, that pretty much checks all the boxes. And it's also going to be fascinating. There's going to be a lot more ears and eyes on the postgame presser than maybe there would be for a normal 3-11 season, just given what's come from the last couple of press conferences. And I understand where Matt Rhode Island is coming from in the sense that a win is a win on the scoreboard, and it's as simple as that. But there is still certainly a section of Patriots fans that look at it and go, hey, keep it to a one-score game, keep it to a 10-point game. Unfortunately, there's a discrepancy in talent so that you kind of have to look at the moral victories and go, well, if we lost but we did this on offense, if we lost but we kept it close and aired the ball out and moved it around and didn't turn it over and played till the final whistle. I honestly think that from both sides of the football, if you came away from this game, Patriots lose by a score, lose by 10, two touchdowns, whatever. But you can say they played to the final whistle. They limited the mistakes. It seemed like the offense took a step. They were on the same page. No false starts, no stupid penalties that just come from not being on the same page. I think you'd get a section of the fan base that would be at least at peace with the way that that went. So a lot more conversation coming up on the Patriots football Sunday right around the corner here on WEEI. That gets you into coverage of the 1 o'clock slate featuring the Eagles and the Commanders. Couple minutes left before we hand it over to them. I have to quickly bring up the Red Sox because, Zach, when I first met you, the first thing I was told about you was he's a diehard Red Sox fan. And I said, okay, that's somebody I need to talk to my first day here. So Red Sox make a trade. They move Cam Boozer out of town for a minor league pitcher to clear up a roster spot on the 40 man for Patrick Sandoval. Your thoughts where you stand right now on this Red Sox offseason? Do you feel like they're going to do something more? Is there another big move in the cards for you?
I do think there's another big move. I think they're going to add another starter. They've seemed pretty dead set on the fact that they're going to add at least two starters that can actually contribute to this year's roster. So I do think there's another move coming there.
Okay.
Very underwhelming besides the Crochet trade so far.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right where I am as well. I have now moved to the other side where I'm just not sure there is another big trade that's coming. I rode that same wave that everybody else rode for a couple of days with Crochet. Oh man, they got the guy. They got the guy that you hope to be this year's Tariq Skubal, like the next big lefty Cy Young candidate. Lou Merlone's on our show in the afternoons calling him a pig. I'm like, this is fire me up. And you didn't give up either of your top two prospects in Anthony and Campbell, or any of your top three, I guess, with Marcelo Meyer. And then they've done nothing, and they've gone right back to what they did in years past, which is go to the scrap heap, get the guy for cheap that's coming off of surgery, get the guy who has, you know, great stuff that Andrew Bailey can mold into a next great reliever or whatever else. Still no right-handed bat to replace Tyler O'Neill, so you've regressed in that spot. You missed out on Soto, which I think it's fair to say Scott Boras leveraged the Red Sox and did so masterfully in order to get some money from the Yankees and Mets. But all of my positive vibes and momentum that I had a couple of weeks ago when that Crochet deal came through, that's worn off for me at this point. So now I'm just upset and pissed off right back where I was a couple of weeks ago. So I appreciate that you have a positive spin on this because I've lost my positivity.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily know that it's coming through spending money because I think the easiest solution is just pay Corbin Burns, but
yeah,
it doesn't really seem like the Red Sox weren't even linked to him when Jeff Passan kind of reset his market the other day.
Yeah.
I did fall in love with the idea of trading for Dylan Cease.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that would be a really nasty two-headed monster, which would be funny that you trade for two former White Sox starters. They had the worst team in baseball last year, and you have their two best starters from 2 years ago.
Because it went so well when you did it with Chris Sale. Yeah, you won a World Series, but then the next 4 or 5 years were or however long it was pretty rough. But regardless, I had to put in a quick Red Sox note. And by the way, thoughts going out to the family of Ricky Henderson, who passed away at the age of 65. It's always heartwarming in that morbid way when you see the baseball world or any world within the sports realm come out and tell their greatest stories about an athlete that was obviously incredible and dominant at a level that you will not see again from stealing bases and Ricky Henderson, but also just a larger-than-life personality. There was a great story that Harold Reynolds told that I'm going to botch before we have to sign off here, talking about how he won the stolen base title 1 year where Ricky Henderson was dealing with an injury. Henderson then called Harold Reynolds and said, "Henderson here. 60 stolen bases? Man, Ricky would have had that by the All-Star break and hung up on him, and that was the end of the conversation." So thoughts obviously going out to the Henderson family. Had a small bit of time here in Boston, but one of the best and brightest of his time stealing bases in Major League Baseball. All right, we are up against it, and we will say goodbye here on WEEI. Thanks so much for spending a couple hours with myself and Zach Coe. Football Sunday, my good friend Christian Arcand, I can see him behind the glass. He's ready to take over at the top of the hour to get you ready for Patriots and Bills and the rest of the NFL slate here in week 16. So keep it locked for them and load up the phone lines at 617-779-7937. Have a wonderful, safe, and warm rest of your Sunday and keep it locked here on WEEI.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.